You always knew when Fritz was in the room.
And he was a flirt.
He was an amazing guy. He wasn't a politico. His big thing was on education and on research. He certainly attended many, many events around the world that dealt with bisexuality and was an ambassador, I think, in much respects from the U.S. Mm-hmm. and from the bi community to the world at large.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The UN marks a grim anniversary. Rights watchers demand a probe of Moscow's Pride Melee and fondest farewells to a pioneering bisexual icon. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Charles Hall.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 3rd, 2006. It was during the first week of June 1981 that a strange new illness among sexually active gay men was first described. Initially labeled GRID, gay-related immune deficiency, HIV-AIDS has since affected some 65 million people of all sexual orientations and socioeconomic classes around the world, killing 25 million of them. But after 25 grim years, some nations still can't bring themselves to even mention the highest risk groups by name. The United States joined predominantly Islamic and Roman Catholic countries at a high-level UN conference on AIDS this week in New York City to oppose any final declaration about the disease that specified injection drug users, sex workers, or gay and bisexual men, ignoring a call to do so by UN Secretary General Kofi Annan as he opened the three-day conference on May 31st. "We need to be realistic," Annan had told reporters. "If we are here to try and end the epidemic and fight the epidemic, we will not succeed by putting our heads in the sand and pretending these people do not exist or do not need help." But opponents argued that drug use, prostitution, and homosexuality are illegal in many countries, and that specifically identifying these high-risk populations in the declaration might be construed as an endorsement. Using language appearing in similar declarations over the past 5 years, the document again references them only as vulnerable groups. Of the declaration, Aditi Sharma, HIV/AIDS campaign and policy coordinator for India-based Action Aid International, issued a statement saying in part, "We are furious. Vulnerable groups such as intravenous drug users, sex workers, and men who have sex with men have been made invisible by this document. It is incomprehensible how negotiators could come up with such a weak declaration." The stated goals of this week's conference were to review efforts to fight AIDS and prepare national plans to combat the virus over the next decade. The gathering came on the heels of a report issued by the UNAIDS office saying that world leaders had failed to meet many of the goals established in 2001 to fight the pandemic.
Human Rights Watch was among several groups this week to call for a full investigation by Russian authorities into the violence at last week's first ever Pride March in Moscow. A mix of young nationalist skinheads and religious fundamentalists attacked the participants at two different locations, beating and kicking several and chanting, "Russia free of faggots, death to sodomites." Many more LGBT activists than their attackers were eventually arrested. Documenting the melee in a briefing paper released this week, Scott Long of Human Rights Watch said, "Police at first seemed to allow the skinheads and others free rein to assault lesbians and gays. When police finally intervened, they forced the two groups closer together, aggravating the violence," he said. "They failed totally to protect people peacefully trying to exercise their rights." Many of Moscow's religious leaders had vocally opposed the Pride March, some specifically threatening violence by their followers. Mayor Yuri Lushkov was equally adamant that no public demonstration by deviants be held, denying an official city permit for the parade, even as organizers were vowing to march without it. Human Rights Watch reports that internal documents from the mayor's office, it had seen, provide evidence that Lushkov had conducted a sustained campaign against LGBT people. In one memorandum, dated March 2006, Lushkov reportedly advised subordinates that it is necessary to take concrete measures to prevent holding public and mass gay events in the capital, instructing them to organize an active campaign in the mass media using appeals from citizens and religious and public organizations.
There's got to be concern about a similar scenario occurring at the next World Pride celebration scheduled for August in Jerusalem. Many of that city's Jewish, Muslim, and Christian leaders have spoken out against the event. Local Pride organizer Jerusalem Open House won an injunction last year against ultra-Orthodox Mayor Yuri Lupolyansky, who, like Moscow's Lushkov, had also sought to ban Pride events in his city. He's reportedly expressed concerns about clashes at this year's World Pride event between Jerusalem's secular and religious factions. But District Court Judge Judith Zur this week ordered city authorities to compensate Jerusalem Open House for failing to provide funding for local Pride events during the past 3 years there, as they do for other cultural events, ordering payments to organizers of 350,000 shekels, or about $77,000. Even if municipal officials have a hard time accepting the community and believe this is an unwanted phenomenon, she wrote, the municipality must treat this community equally out of recognition of the supreme values of tolerance and pluralism, which are at the core of democratic values. The Jerusalem World Pride Festival was originally planned for last year but postponed because it would have taken place during the tense Israeli pullout from the Gaza Strip. Organizers of the Pride Parade in Tel Aviv disappointed some by canceling this year's event and urging its residents to attend Jerusalem's global festival instead. The last World Pride event was held in Rome in 2000, despite vocal opposition by the Vatican, and attracted about 500,000 peaceful participants. Local organizers expect tens of thousands to attend the six-day event in Jerusalem, starting on August 6th, scheduled to include street parties, workshops, and a film festival.
Denmark's parliament this week passed a law allowing artificial insemination for lesbians and single women in the country's public hospitals. The vote followed heated debate over the issue, which has divided political parties and government officials between those who demand full equality for lesbians and gay men and those who advocate what they call traditional family values. 86 MPs supported the measure, 61 voted against, while 21 abstained, among them members of the government. Same-gender couples still don't have adoption rights in the country. Denmark was the first to legalize same-gender registered partnerships in 1989.
But Costa Rica's constitutional court has ruled 5-2 that lesbi-gay couples do not have a right to marriage. At the same time, the court urged legislators to grant those couples justice and legal security by creating a way to regulate stable, loyal same-gender unions. Plaintiff Yashen Castrillo, a gay lawyer, sought to have the Costa Rica Family Code's heterosexual definition of marriage declared unconstitutional. He said he will appeal the ruling to the Inter-American Court of Human Rights.
Canadian equality activists are upset with Statistics Canada's 2006 National Census form. The document instructs legally married same-gender couples to use the other category to record their relationship rather than ticking the husband or wife box. Statistics Canada claims that it hasn't had time to change the form since same-gender marriages were legalized nationwide last July. They have been legal in Ontario since June of 2003, in British Columbia since July 2003, and in Quebec since April of 2004. Gemma Hickey, president of the national lobby group EGAL, said the census treats gays and lesbians as second-class citizens. Canada conducts a national census every 5 years.
For the second time in 2 years, Colorado's Republican Governor Bill Owens has vetoed a bill to add sexual orientation and gender identity to the state's workplace anti-discrimination code, claiming that the bill had the potential to be costly for Colorado businesses. Even though the state still has no basic employment bias protections, Coloradans will vote this November on a referendum that would offer domestic partnerships with many of the benefits of marriage to same-gender couples. The proposal by the Democratic-controlled legislature did not require the governor's approval. Up to three other initiatives could share the November ballot with the legislature's domestic partner plan. One would specifically outlaw same-gender marriage, another would ban civil unions, and a third, drafted by equality advocates, guarantees that the domestic partner plan would take effect, if approved by voters, regardless of the outcome of any of the other initiatives. Proponents of each of the three initiatives are currently gathering signatures on petitions to qualify them for the ballot.
And finally, Batwoman will again be coming out of her Batcave, literally, as a lesbian. The original superhero first appeared in DC Comics in 1956 and was killed off in 1979. This is not just about having a gay character, says Dan DiDio, vice president and executive editor at DC. We're trying for overall diversity in the DC universe. We have strong African-American, Hispanic, and Asian characters. We're trying to get a better cross-section of our readership and the world. The 2006 version of Batwoman, just as with her earlier incarnation, The Secret Identity of Kathy Kane, is scheduled to appear this July in 52, a year-long DC Comics publication that recently made its debut. She's a rich Gotham City socialite who has a romantic history with another 52 character, former police detective Renee Montoya. The new series is set in a world where superheroes like Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman are no longer a presence. The new Batwoman will have flowing red hair, knee-high red boots with spiked heels, and a form-fitting black outfit. Opinions about the new Batwoman on websites devoted to DC Comics have ranged from outrage to approval. Some have taken a more light-hearted approach. Asked one poster, "Wouldn't ugly people as heroes be more groundbreaking?"
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 3, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Charles Hall.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. You can also demonstrate your solidarity by taking part in an online benefit auction. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. Again, to find out more about special CD thank you gifts, subscriptions, and the auction, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
Dr. Fritz Klein, whose groundbreaking expansion on Kinsey's theories pioneered research into bisexuality, died recently at the age of 73. He was born in Vienna, Austria in 1932, and as a boy fled to the U.S. with his family to escape the onslaught of Nazism. Klein studied medicine at Bern University in Switzerland and received an MBA from Columbia University in New York. Early in his 30-year career as a board-certified psychiatrist, he placed an ad in New York's venerable Village Voice newspaper in an effort to fill the gap in the scientific understanding of bisexuality. That led to the development and publication of his Klein Grid and his founding of numerous bi-related organizations, publications, and websites. This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching in Vancouver, B.C., hosted a tribute to Fritz Klein on her Queer FM radio program in late May with two bi activists who shared their recollections of his life and work, which she's been kind enough to share with us.
We got some sad news in the bisexual community this week. Fritz Klein passed away on Wednesday night at the age of 73, and I have invited a couple of folks from the bi community on the program this evening to help remember him. from Tucson, Arizona. We're joined by Alexei Gurin, who was, you know, you were one of the founders of Binet USA, right, Alexei?
That's correct.
And currently is involved in the Tucson Bi Forum. He's also the program director of the Bi Men's Conference and general manager of two resources you might be very familiar with, bisexual.org and bimagazine.org.
Glad to be here.
And also on the line is a local longtime bisexual organizer, Jensen Didelow, who was involved in the North American Conference on Bisexuality, Gender, and Sexual Diversity here in Vancouver in 2001, and also several editions of the BC Bisexual Conference. And a current participant in the new bisexual group, which doesn't have a name, at the center.
The reason it doesn't have one is because I think we eschew labels right now.
So, Alexei, maybe I can ask you to, for people who don't know Fritz or who don't really know what he did, maybe I could get you to kind of summarize what his history and what his role in the bisexual movement was.
Sure. Probably the thing that Fritz was most famous for was in publishing in 1978 the Kleingrid. What that was is that it expanded on the 0 to 6 Kinsey scale that had been created in the early 40s. The Kleingrid kind of moved beyond just the behavior and also looked at sexual experience, attraction, fantasies, emotional preference, social preference, lifestyle, as well as self-identification. So Klein's sort of vision was very, very revolutionary for that time because it really expanded the whole concept. And as he did his research, he really showed that sexual orientation was a very complex thing and that it was really, really too complex to be broken down to simple, well-defined categories like A, bi, or even straight, and that there was a lot of self-identification where people lived, and it continues to be used today, and is certainly a legacy that he's left us all. He helped to form the Bisexual Forum in 1982 in San Diego, and he's also the editor for the Journal of Bisexuality. He created that, which was a series of research stories, personal viewpoints, that comes out about 2 to 4 times a year, depending on the volume of writings that come in.
Mm-hmm.
He founded the American Institute of Bisexuality, a public benefit charity, in 1998, which encouraged support and assisted also in research and education on bisexuality. And he served actually as the chairman of the board up until his death last Wednesday.
Hmm.
He was a character, that's what I can say. I've known Fritz for many, many, many years, and he was someone that had a true interest in what was going on in the bisexual community. Wasn't particularly too interested in the politics. He was really much more interested in people's lives and who they were and how they lived it. And for the last 5 years, we've been working together on the Bi-Men's Conferences, which was really an attempt to outreach to a community of men that are oftentimes sort of considered mysterious and dangerous. And really,
why?
Well, you know, I think in society that when you talk about things like bisexuality, when we talk about women, there seems to be a lot of permission around that, although that permission comes with a price, which is oftentimes a much, much more of a patriarchal viewpoint of sexuality, and that obviously two women can be together if a man is present, and there's a certain amount of sexual erotica. You can pick up any men's magazine, and certainly within there you'll find, you know, some spread of two women. You don't pick up a lot of Vogue magazines
mm-hmm.
with a spread of two men. So there's a lot of more shame involved in the men's community, and certainly a lot of people that, you know, don't feel as comfortable coming out of that closet to find out other people that are in a similar situation. So the Bi-Men's Conference was created to specifically targeted those closeted men and created a venue that was safe and allowed them to speak to their peers as well as people in the field.
Wow. So, Jensen, how did you meet Fritz?
I think the very first time would have been when he came to one of the BC conferences. But I didn't really get a chance to interact with him as much then. When I really got the chance to get to know him a little bit better was when San Diego hosted a bisexual conference. Now, when we went down to that, that was a pretty fun time. As expected, Fritz would have been instrumental in a lot of that going on, being I guess one of the more visible faces of the movement. It made it, I think, a lot better. He had some great stories to tell.
Do you recall any of them, Jens?
I'd like to say that no, I don't think I want to tell any of them. These were, after all, after parties that my stories are from.
Gotcha. Well, so what was your impression of Fritz when you first met him?
Brilliant. He comes across as pretty well-spoken, very confident. Probably one of the reasons why he was able to get his theories out into the open and be taken seriously. He was a strong enough personality for that. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness.
Hmm. So what about you, Alexei? Do you remember when you met Fritz and what your first impressions were?
I had known about Fritz for a number of years because I had actually read a number of his books. And he was one of those few books that were out actually specifically on bisexuality. So every time he came out with something, I was rushing to the bookstore to grab it. And in 1993, I was a regional delegate for Binet USA, the national bar organization here in the U.S. And I was in one of the committee meetings on bylaws, and there was this gentleman sitting across from me, giving his opinions on what he thought were good bylaws and bad and what have you, and people kept referring to him as Fritz, and it didn't really connect for me. And at the end, he came over and we were talking on some of the points. He introduced himself as Dr. Fritz Klein, and I can just remember being in awe. And we ended up just having this amazing conversation about sort of where he saw bisexuality and some of the research that he was working on and his interests. And here's this guy who really has moved through the community in so many various ways and given so much money and help to community, different organizations around not only the U.S. but abroad. And when you sat with him and you talked with him, his focus was entirely on you. I mean, he was somebody that genuinely cared to hear your story.
Hmm.
He wanted to know who you were, how you identified, and why did you identify that way. And he just had this amazing humor. He was, he could be cantankerous, he could be flirtatious in seconds.
Hmm.
And it basically began a very special relationship between the two of us, and we stayed in touch. We continue to work together on various projects. Bisexual.org and Bi Magazine are both basically things that he developed and he created. And I remember my last conversation with him, which was literally less than a week before he passed away, and he'd asked me to sort of step in the role to sort of manage it. And, Fritz knew everybody. I mean, he knew everybody in the U.S., Canada, Europe, Australia. I mean, if there was a bi community to go visit, Fritz went there. And he called me up and he said, I want you to take over doing this for me. And I just, like, of all the people that you know, why are you calling me? And he's like, because I know you'll take care of it.
Hmm.
And it was that kind of trust that he had in people.
Mm-hmm.
That just brought the best out in you.
So did Fritz know he was ill?
Yes. He had been, he was diagnosed about, I want to say about a month ago. With inoperable pancreatic cancer, and was basically going through treatment. He'd been given 2 to 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he was somebody that said, you could live 100 years, you could live 100 days. I have to live my life the way I have to live it. And, he lived his life. I mean, he literally went to the movies the night before he died.
Hmm.
I mean, he went out. He wanted to go out there and see the world and be a part of it. He didn't want to be someone that was shut up. He was just an amazing guy. He wasn't a politico. his big thing was on education and on research, but he certainly attended many, many events around the world that dealt with bisexuality, and was an ambassador, I think, in much respects from the U.S. Mm-hmm. and from the bi community to the world at large. You always knew when Fritz was in the room. It was not hard to talk with Fritz about anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, he seemed to be able to sort of seemed to have an opinion on everything that was going on in the world, as well as in the community.
Yeah.
He'll just broach the subject, and you're flying in conversation all of a sudden, you know? You didn't have to worry too much about what words you used. It quickly became conversation. It was wonderful. The few conversations that I've ever had with Fritz.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, Alexei, what becomes now of all of Fritz's work, the Journal of Bisexuality and the Foundation and the websites?
Well, they are going to continue. Fritz certainly wanted to leave his mark and his legacy, and there are our board members for the AIB, the American Institute of Bisexuality / Bisexual Foundation. It goes by both names. And the websites will continue in operation with his name. Today, the front page is a memoriam to Fritz and some of the things that he did. And we also invite the members of the bi community, whether you knew him or not, personally, if you wanted to share something about your experience with Fritz. We also have a guest book where people can leave their memories. Fritz is survived by his partner, Tom, and Tom actually takes time to read those every day. So we plan on continuing in his memory and continue to do the work that he wanted done. So, and I'm very excited to be a part of that. I think we all continue his work in our own ways.
You've been listening to bisexual activists Alexei Gurin of Tucson, Arizona, and Jensen DeDulo of Vancouver, B.C., with This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching. They pay tribute to pioneering bisexual researcher and educator Dr. Fritz Klein, who died on May 24th at the age of 73 in San Diego, California. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Charles Hall, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, Steve Pride, and Heather Kitching contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to our website to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special LGBT history, music, and culture CDs as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 4CCR, Cairns, Queensland, 7THE, Hobart, Tasmania, 6RTR, Perth, West Australia, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.